testing, 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 testing. Okay. I think this is the problem with smoking. I think that you can certainly say this is true about smoking, but I don't think that it's not necessarily true about drinking. This is the cause for it. You say you want to stop it. I say forget it. I don't think there's a way in the world to keep the kids from drinking. I think you ought to regulate it. And I think that maybe you can do this by a limited sale of alcohol to teenagers, although there's an easy way to get around that, I suppose. I don't know. I can certainly understand how this problem is kind of insurmountable. But the reason we drink, gang, is not because we're dirty, foul people. It's not because we want to prove our sophistication. It's because, well, there's two reasons. One, I know several of my friends who actually like the taste of liquor. Two, I know several of my friends who like it because it relaxes them. So I suppose that any argument would be valid in this particular thing. I am at a loss. I'll admit that readily about the drinking situation, as much as I am about the hoods. Well, I think your reasons are wrong. I mean, I think your reasoning is wrong. And I think that to be appalled at this problem is like being appalled at older drinking parties. I think the only difference between an older person drinking and a young person drinking is that a young person can't handle his liquor. And when a young person gets really drunk, the inhibitions of youth come out. This is one of those things, I guess. For the lower class of people, the hoods and so on and so forth, it makes them feel powerful. And then, of course, for the kids that are just the average American teenager, it gives them a comfortable, easy feeling. So we drink pretty much for the same reason that y'all drink. We're just not able to handle our booze, so I don't really know what to say. You know, I'm not going to talk right now on girls. I'll talk talk about right now the great deal of controversy that's come up on kids that have come from well-to-do homes being out. All of a sudden, it seems to be a thing to do. It seems to be cool to crash parties and steal and go on and do things that we have generally, throughout our society, felt was wrong. Now, I think so too. I think it's wrong, and I'll tell you quite frankly that I've done it. In analyzing why, there were a lot of reasons, but it all boiled down to somebody else was doing it. We were all doing it together, and it made you feel part of something. You'll find that you're not going to get one guy out of these well-to-do homes, busting into jewelry stores, knocking over cafes. They go in a group, and it's not for strength because of fear of attack. It's for strength on your own inside. You've got to have somebody there because you know that what you're doing is wrong. You know it as sure as you do it. Let me turn this tape over. I've got so much to say even yet. We know that basically it's wrong. I'll expound to a great extent on this wrong right feeling that most American teenagers have. We do it because you're either bored, which is a lot of times, 99% of the case. You see, the entertainment media has pretty much overlooked everybody under 21 because we don't have any money, technically. We've got money now, and people are capitalizing on it. We've got just a whole lot of money, and if you'll examine the teenage market, you find out we spend billions of dollars a year just on our own pleasure, because that's all we've got to spend money on. And you'll find out just how much we influence the average market. But of course, that's kind of irrelevant. Coupled with the fact of not having anything to do, we had this yearning, this wanting of, again, and here we go back to the same thing, the leader. And when we find one, even if it's in our own group, and you'll find out your leaders are your most insecure people in your younger ages. They're not your dynamic young student body presidents. No sirree, Bob. Those don't lead the kids. The kids are led by the guy who is not afraid to do what everybody else is thinking, you see. So, when the leader says something, that it's almost an edict, something that you can't get away from. That's a lot of the reasons of the well-to-do homes, because I don't think that how rich or poor you are has anything to do with the way you feel, you know, money and so on and so forth. Girls. Boy, my favorite subject. Girls, dad, girls, mama, are the one saving grace that a boy's ego has when he's young. It's not so much that with a girl. And girls have to stay home and so on and so forth until a boy calls them. And I'm not saying that the girls have it a lot better than the boy, because they sure don't. But I think that the boys have an awful, tough, awful lot tougher time than people are really quite ready to recognize. Now, when a guy finds a girl that he really enjoys being with, her company and everything like that, he clings to her. He makes her his girl by the ring around her neck. He makes her his girl by some other bracelet, exchanging of dog tags, or whatever is the custom. It varies from town to town, you know. And there is a feeling of warmth and a feeling of almost being understood by a guy when he's got a girl that says, "I love you." Now, she knows that that love is not basic and real. I say she knows it deep, 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 so deep that she couldn't even identify it. She couldn't even understand it, and she would swear up and down, no, she really loved this guy. And same with the guy. He'd swear that he really loved that girl. But somewhere down way, way, way back, they know that something is not all there. When you're young, this love is cool. It's like being wanted. This love makes you feel like you're needed by somebody on both parties' part. Now you watch how this kicks back. A parent's love is not cool. If you remember at the first of this recording, I said, it's so important for everything in a teenager's life to be cool, to measure up to the standards of his own society. And this kind of love is cool. feeling that you need in order to maintain a degree of security. When it becomes completely knocked out of perspective by one of two things, the mother's attitude or father's attitude toward the relationship, or a relative stagnation of the mechanics of the relationship, such as not being able to do anything, it will develop into two things, kind of a series of twos, isn't it? That of promiscuity on the part of the girl, or midnight rides. I can't really make myself completely understood on this, I don't think, as much as I'd like to. But that's as close as I can come to it, what I just said. The solution, you got me. Doesn't seem like giving anybody an answer to hardly anything. And I'm really not going to try, because I really don't think I know. But I'm going to tell you what I think is really the problem. Because I don't think anybody knows, and I think that since adults know a little more about this thing, perhaps, they may not, know a little more about it, then they're in a little better position to understand what to do, as long as they know the problem. I will tell you what is not the solution. The solution is not for more parental love. The solution is not for recreation centers, because those things, people, are not cool, and you cannot make them cool. And when will you quit trying to do that? And they say, and I can hear it now. Boy, it's pretty bad when the American youth of today says mother and father love and social functions are not cool. Well, buddy, I'm saying it, and I'm going to say it real loud. That is not cool. You cannot use this as a basis for making young men and young women choose a proper course of life. People, we do it in spite of you, not because of you. That's all I can say about that. The girl problem, I have a few suggestions. Once again, back to the entertainment thing. Let's keep ourselves busy, because there's an awful lot of energy in American youth that's just unchanneled, uncharted, and just don't have any place to go. Recognize the relationship. Never, never say that the relationship is superfluous. Never say that, well, that's the way you probably should feel at this age. Never say that it doesn't make a lot of difference between your relationship. And mom and dad, never, never, never break a boy and a girl up without bringing them over to your house, to both of them, to the one in question, and letting it be known to both of them don't think they ought to date as much as they are, and so on and so forth. But don't just arbitrarily break somebody up, because you'll run someone absolutely crazy. You'll run somebody nuts, and it's liable to be your own kid. So that's all I got to say about that. I'm going to close this. And I don't know whether this stand will be recognized by many people. But there are three things that I feel like that maybe adults don't understand that they ought to. In the first place, the American teenager of today is just as confused, just as lost, and feels just as unneeded and unwanted as you pray to God he doesn't. The thing that salvages this is the fact that we know it. We know it. We know we're this way. It's want of a better horse. It's just want of a better horse. It's a feeling of misunderstanding of what's going on around you. It's the want not to be loved by your mother and your father. It's the want to belong. It's the want to have somebody ask you what you think and really give a damn. It's the want that makes them drink. It's the want that makes us date as we date. It's the want that makes us engage in the pastimes that we engage in. And we're going to keep doing it until we come up with an answer. You can't give us that answer. All you can do is ask us, please, and I beg this of people, ask us, please, can you help us? What do we want you to do? For once in an adult's life, stand up and admit. Stand up and say, kids, you're right. We don't know what to do about this problem. But I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll work with you. And we'll pool our knowledge with your knowledge. Because you know more about the problem, and we've got a lot of answers. And we'll listen. I'll guarantee we'll listen. I guarantee we'll listen, Mom and Dad. I guarantee we'll listen, Mr. Policeman. Approach it from that angle, will you? And be sincere about it. Dick Clark was almost there. Dick Clark almost had it. Now, I don't mean this to be a big thing for Dick Clark, because the man, I'm sure, has his shortcomings as much the same as anybody else. The second item . Whatever you do, please make it cool. I can't define that word. I can't tell you where it comes from. I can't tell you how to use it. If it's not cool, if it's a yuck, then quit doing it, because you're not going to get anywhere. Listen. Wait. And watch. And when you see the opportune movement, then move. But don't go bustling in on the already so terribly confused world of a teenager. Third, the very last, we know we're wrong. We know it. We've always known it. You knew it when you were growing up, that what you were doing wasn't absolutely right. But you just didn't know what teenagers are the quickest to discern, and the teenagers have a code of black or white. It's either all right or it's all wrong. And they may do it, but they know it's wrong. And if it's right, they know it's right. They may justify, they may stand up and scream. It might be justified, but they know when they're right and when they're wrong. I'm talking here about mechanics, about functions, about everyday living. The place where we don't know what's going on is in our own thinking. We're not sure. We're growing. We're trying to find out. And that's what the plea that you hear from us is. We're just trying to find out. So help us. Don't hinder us. Work with us, not for us. And for heaven's sakes, believe in us. I called her Arabie. So did most of her other friends, I think. It was short for Arabella Craddock. That name sort of went with her, too. I don't remember a lot about her now, about the way she looked at me. I just remember that she looked like her name was Arabie, or something like that. She was blonde. Not real blonde. She had kind of blonde that you're sure is natural, you know? And she wore her hair the way blonde girls should wear their hair, about shoulder length and simple. I guess it would come closer to being a pageboy style than anything else. She had emerald eyes. They weren't green, they were emerald. Well, actually, not the kind of emerald you think of. I mean, they weren't like a jewel or anything. They were like a new, clean, empty 7-Up bottle when you hold it up to the sun, or like linen skin bracer, or something. That kind of emerald. Blonde hair and those emerald eyes. And if that wasn't enough, she had a suntan that wasn't really a suntan at all, but a natural skin color. All this makes Arabie sound like she was a complete dream boat or something, but she really wasn't. I remember a buddy and I decided one day that Arabie was clean cut. That's really the only word. When I met Arabie, I was in some sort of thespian meeting at school. And since I knew a great deal about acting and all, I was being supremely cool that day. You know how you act when you're in your own habitat. Anyway, Arabie was there, and I saw her and started showing off and impressed her as far as I could tell. That Friday, we went out. I really liked Arabie the more I knew her. That Friday, we talked and talked after some dopey dance in the gym, and I felt real comfortable with her somehow. I wanted to kiss her that night, I remember, but I didn't. She had class, and I was afraid of messing everything up if I tried to kiss her on the first date. But I sure wanted to. I remember I said to her in the car that I thought we'd better go before I kissed her. It was the kind of remark you make just to see what the girl will do, you know. Well, she wasn't shocked or anything, but I figured that I'd better play it safe, so I shook her hand and winked and borrowed a little power from thinking how it would be the next time. It was a while after that I asked her out again. 2 or 3 weeks, I remember. But we didn't go anywhere that night, either really important, to a football game, I think. But when we got to the door, she started acting funny, and I knew something was wrong. I talked for a while on the front porch, kind of feeling the situation out and all, and by the time the conversation hadn't gone too far, I knew that things were fouled up. She said she'd had a fever blist or something stupid, and I almost laughed, but it wasn't really that funny. Anyway, I didn't kiss her. Oh, I mean, I went ahead and tried, but she was pretty set, so I didn't make a scene. I just left, said goodnight, winked. About this time, I started hanging around with a bunch of kids from the choir at school. We were all pretty young folks, I guess. degree of social promise around school, but it never was for real. And then these kids came along, and I felt like I belonged to them or something. There was Frank and Fricky, who smoked London Dock, and was best friends with Scott Ripley, who really didn't like Virginia Witt, who was always trying to make friends with Jan Rankin, who drove a 57 Chevrolet she let me drive. You know, one of those kind of cliques. Well, there were a bunch more. We were always skipping school and pooling our money and buying some stuff from a delicatessen. Then we'd go to this huge abandoned old house with rolling lawns and a private lake and have a party on the shore of this lake. Or we'd all get together and have a party at my house. There were about 15 or 16 of us all together. It was getting pretty cold, and I still remember the frost on the inside of the car windows of Franklin's London Dock and the way leaves sound when they're dry. Every time it gets cold, I think of that time. Well, anyway, one night we decided we should have a party that weekend at my house. I asked Araby to go. I don't know why. Araby really wasn't one of those type people. She was terribly popular, cheerleader and all, and was much sought after date, and I wasn't even sure she'd fit in with my little group. But I'd been dating her some, and felt like I just wanted her to come, you know. When Friday came around, snow was forecast, and sure enough, about noon, huge tufts of white snow sauntered down and seemed to sort of nestle on the ground. In Dallas, this was something of a rarity, and we were all pretty excited about it. By nightfall, the ground was covered with this white pelt, and it was really great to see. But the coolest part of the evening was the moon. How it could be snowing like it was, and have such a moon was amazing to me. Araby that night had on a white full-length cashmere coat and was very soft when I helped her into the car. Everything smelled like an Eskimo pie, and I knew that I'd have a terrific time that night. And I did. Araby meshed quite smoothly into that little society, considering, and I fell more in love with her as the evening wore on. It didn't seem to make any difference that I had never been able to kiss her goodnight or anything, even though I wanted to all the time, even though she had shunned every time I'd ask her or tried to kiss her. Everything was just real great all of a sudden, and I thought Araby was cool beyond words. We left the party about 11:30, I guess. I know it was early. One thing we usually never did was drink, and so I had all my faculties on them. And when we stopped outside to go, or stepped outside to go, and I saw the snow and the moon and felt the air and smelled her white cashmere coat, I felt like I should yell or something. It was terrific, and it was all there and all at the same time. I had to drive slow home because of the roads and all. We talked on the way home about nothing, really. The headlights of the car made the snow look like fallen carnations and made the roads look clean and new and fresh. When we got to the door, we both stood there in the snow and looked at each other. I knew that Araby wanted me to kiss her. I knew it as sure as the world. I knew she wanted me to put my arms around her white cashmere coat and pull her close to me and kiss her gently and everything. I knew it. And I looked at Araby and I just said goodnight and winked like I always had and walked away. And the snow crunched under the tires of the car. And the moon was shining, and everything smelled like an Eskimo pie.
Love you. Thank you.